This week in the funny pages, we have Constantine the Hellblazer, number 11.
Mighty Thor, number 6.
Moon Knight, number 1.
Star Wars, Obi-Wan and Anakin, number 4.
Star Wars, Darth Vader, number 19.
Star Wars, C-3PO.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty small week this week.
Oh, wait. Theme song. I was supposed to work on it a little bit, but I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I need to give it some percussion. Okay, I'll go first. Constantine, this time on issue 11, Travel Foreman is doing all of the artwork, so I'm very happy with that. It's like I mentioned last time, it's super creepy, and so putting him on any sort of horror comic is the right choice. Constantine is in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. Previously, he had just left New York. He's going into a club. He's like really dirty and tattered and looks pretty disgusting. And then I'm pretty sure this is Gabriel that shows up. Let me double check. Oh, and there's this panel I wanted to show you, because in almost every Travel Foreman issue I've read, I don't know, can you see the one I'm pointing at?
Yeah.
Okay, he has this angle of people's face, like them have their head turned like that in almost every issue I've read of his. And I just thought that was kind of funny. It's kind of like an awkward, I don't know, it seems awkward, but it's actually probably a more natural angle to see somebody at. Let's see. I want to make sure this is Gabriel. Yep, it's Gabriel. So he's talking to Gabriel, who's showed up before in the Constantine back history. And he's kind of talking to him about what's going on with Neuron, the Donald Trump guy. And apparently Gabriel has like set up a place in Los Angeles, and like is kind of talking about how he set up like entertainment and stuff for people to keep them from doing bad things, sort of, I guess. Then we see, it's kind of just like the first half of the book was just kind of Constantine going to different places around LA. And then he goes into a bar and he sees this chick and he asks to buy her a drink. And it turns out that she is possessed by Dead Man, Boston Brand.
Hey.
Yeah. And so they have a big conversation. And then finally, Boston attempts to take over Constantine, and he does, but it's just Constantine's fighting him the whole time. So if you can see these pages, that he has like this gnarled face. Do you need me to move it at all?
Angle it up just a bit.
Like that?
There.
Okay. Yeah. You see his gnarled face. This is when Boston possesses him. This face is funny. And then they get on an airplane, which is a bad idea. And then Boston kind of can't take it anymore. He hops out of Constantine and possesses the woman sitting next to him, and then they keep talking. And then eventually Constantine does a spell to make him go away. And he does. And then Constantine goes to, let's see, he's trying to go back to LA. I forgot where they were going, but he's trying to go back to LA. And when he's walking around, it looks like an airport, but it looks more like a bus or a train station. Malcolm is there, his ex-boyfriend. And that's where it ends. So not a lot happened. It was mostly that. It was mostly about those two conversations with Gabriel and then with Boston Brand. I was kind of sad to see. I don't know if you picked up the DC previews with the Hellblazer is going to be in the Rebirth, but I really think they should have just keep going with this title that's going now on these creators, because it's. I feel like they've captured what Geoff Johns is wanting to capture with Rebirth stuff. So,
who's doing the Rebirth stuff for Constantine?
I don't know if they've released it yet. I think all I saw on here was.
Yeah, I remember looking at it, and it was just called Hellblazer, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see any. Oh wait, it's Simon Oliver and Moritat. Just one name, Moritat. And that's it. Yeah, I'm not familiar with either of them. So the cover for the first issue looks cool. But that's all I know about that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear about some Thor.
All right. So in issue 6, it's kind of like the issue of Constantine we just went over. It doesn't really do a lot for the story. It's just more of a kind of a box episode in television where it's just trying to tell a smaller story to go through the bigger aspect of the whole series that they're going to do. So we have Dario Agger, the CEO of Roxxon Energy, who has sided with, I don't know if you remember, Malekith, I said, from the last few issues, he has like been trying to start a war, but through deception and all that stuff, and Loki killed his mother and all that stuff. So he's going through that Malekith is becoming super powerful. He has all of these allies, and he doesn't trust him, you know? So he's like, well, I need some allies. What should I do? So he goes to Loki. He's like, yeah, you should probably be my ally right now. But so what he says is like, I need to balance the scales. I need more monsters on my team. So Loki tells him, I guess the simplest way you could probably say it is a parable. It could be an actual story, but I just considered it a parable. He says, you know, let's talk about allow me, if you will, tell you a story. One that begins long ago in the age of the Vikings. So then we get the drastic art change. You can tell that by that. So here's what the normal series looks like. I mean, you've read Thor.
Yeah.
And then it changes. It's more of a, I don't know, like more of a art book, I guess, kind of way. So we get to a story, Midgard, Shores of Sagarak, 18. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
896 AD. So a few years ago, Balgok the Black was a fearsome young chieftain. So it's telling this story about this chieftain that is going through, fighting through enemies and stuff like that. But his thing that he does is every time before he fights, he prays to Thor to help him win the battle. And what happens is Thor comes down and actually fights with him. See that panel down there? That's just Thor fighting all these enemies. So that's the whole thing, you know. He's just saying, every time you do that, just so you know, you pray to me and you're going to win this fight. So Balrog's fame grew quickly, and he becomes arrogant, greedy. Everyone says, you know, you do an amazing job, but, you know, Thor is helping you, so it's not really you. So his pride is his fall, essentially. And then one day, he decides to not pray to Thor. And Thor doesn't fight for him. He fights for the opposite army that he's fighting. So all of Baldog's men are like, oh, we're definitely going to lose. The Thunder God switch sides. How are we going to fight the God of Thunder?
Yeah.
So he loses the fight and all of his men. So Baldog knew right away where he'd gone wrong and that he had to set things right. He prayed, but he doesn't pray to Thor. He prays to Loki.
No.
He prayed to, like, where do you put it? He prayed for power to lay, the power to battle my brother, to lay him low, to break his bastard bones, I believe you said. So he prays to him, and he tells him to go on a journey. And the journey is to go fight a dragon, kill it, and drink its blood.
Yummy.
Its lava.
Lava, yeah. Blood?
Yeah.
That
it says,
awesome.
Drank the dragon's blood until he vomited fire. So it looks like... Oh, shoot. As I try to show it to you, I drop the page. It just looks like molten lava he's drinking. So it's like, in the text it says his vomit, but it could just be his blood, essentially.
Did Smog have lava blood?
Sure. I don't remember.
Well, in that case, I should probably watch Battle of the Five Armies, finally.
So then he goes to Thor to battle him. You know, and he has this other army that Thor is with by this time. And he says, oh no, he's nothing, you know, Baldog is nothing because of this. You know, he decided to fight. And then he becomes... a monster.
Rawr.
So he comes like some kind of Thor-like creature, like Bane when he has venom stuck into him and all that stuff. And then a fight ensues. And then he, like, here's the funny thing I saw. Like, the final page is, you know, they're still fighting. He says, ha, puny god. I could only think of Thor or Hulk at that point. So
yeah.
It's like, ah.
Yeah, he kind of looks hulky.
Yeah, he does. Well, that's the cover for the next one. So, yeah, he does kind of look like Hulk. So, yeah, so it was just a smaller story, just going on to a parable-like sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will go further into detail how it's going to affect the story in the next issue.
So the character that we were following was just... Who was telling the parable?
Loki.
Okay.
Loki to... what's his name in this story?
Malekith?
Dario Agger. I don't recognize that name. He's the Roxxon Energy CEO.
Oh, yeah.
But he was in the series beforehand.
Yeah.
But, like, it was just... the whole story was just his own standalone thing.
He was in, like, the limited... the first Jason Aaron Goddess of Thunder. Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, he's been in this series. I don't know if he's, like, a Marvel character, period, or anything like that.
And probably.
Start of Civil War, barely covers.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I got the Spider-Gwen one, too. It's pretty good.
Oh, nice. Okay, next, we have very much anticipated Moon Knight number one.
Which I didn't get to pick up.
I highly recommend you get it.
I went to Zona and Gladstone, and they didn't have it.
Wow.
It was like, wow, I didn't think it would be that... Either they just didn't have enough issues, and people got them, or they just weren't anticipating demand, I guess.
Well, I know the Zona Rosa store, there's only, like, two people subscribed to it, so there's... And I had signed up for two copies, so they probably only ordered five copies. And
yeah.
That's probably why. But it's written by Jeff Lemire, who is on my, like, probably top 10 favorite modern writers list. He did the New 52 Animal Man run. He did the whole thing, and it was... that run is amazing. He's doing Descender for Image right now, which I've only read the first issue, but that is supposedly really good. He has a really good backlog. Actually, let me look up a little, since we have the internet in front of us. Jeff Lemire. I've heard it pronounced Lemire, but that just seems very wrong. Get some more of his credits.
Who did the art for?
Senor Greg Smallwood, local boy.
Wow.
I probably live 30 minutes away from him. And his, I'll get to more on his artwork when we start reading, but let me get some of Jeff Lemire's background. So Animal Man, he did Frankenstein, Agent of Shade for DC, which I'd never read, but anytime Frankenstein showed up in like Justice League Dark or anything, he was awesome. Of course, he, with the Animal Man run that eventually did a crossover event with Swamp Thing, the Rot World crossover, and that was awesome. So he got to work with Scott Snyder. Oh, he's been writing. He started the New 52 Green Arrow run, which I'd read a tiny bit. I heard it started out pretty poorly, but then got really good. And Jeff Lemire actually collaborated with the people on the Arrow show to, and so like they both incorporate things from the other,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was cool. He wrote Teen Titans Earth One, which was pretty good. I didn't care for the artwork. I don't particularly care for the Dotsons artwork. I like their covers occasionally, but their interiors just kind of throw me off. He's been the head of like All New Hawkeye for a while. It's a very popular run. He's writing right now. He's writing Extraordinary X-Men and the ongoing Old Man Logan series.
All
right. Let's see. Outside of the big two, there's Descender, Plutona, which I had on my list for a long time to read, but I, for some reason, didn't pick it up. Oh, and I'm not sure if this has ever came out or not, but there was this, here it says graphic novel called AD After Death that was supposed to be Scott Snyder, and Jeff Lemire was illustrating it. And
right.
I looked for that for months and months, waiting for it to come out, and just nothing ever came of it. So hopefully that's still coming. It may have come out. Let me see if it's on Amazon real quick. Because I remember trying to subscribe to it, and it just, there was no D. Nope, hasn't come out yet. Well, he's probably so busy writing, he can't sit down to draw anything. Yeah, so those are his most notable. He did some work on Justice League Dark. He helped with the Trinity War crossover. He headed up Justice League United, which I did not read. He co-wrote Future's End, which was really good. Future's End is massive. I think the reason why I like it so much is it's this really expansive story that it's kind of amazing it doesn't get more talked about, but it seemed like it didn't really change much in the DC universe, I guess is why, but it was really good. So anyway, on to Moon Knight number one. I'm sure you've seen the cover everywhere. Got Mark Spector in the loony bin, which I know I told you this, but, and I'm probably going to say this 20 times, but this was amazing. It was perfect. Like, Moon Knight is my favorite character, as you know, and as a diehard Moon Knight fan, this was a perfect start of what this new Moon Knight series is going to be, and just a perfect way to continue the Moon Knight legacy. So it starts off, we have this dreamlike art style. Greg Smallwood's amazing. He does sort of this outcast Azteca. If you know, I forget his first name, but he's drawing outcasts with Robert Kirkman is writing.
Yeah,
and he kind of does that style, which is what I in my head is kind of the Image style, but it's a lot tighter, and I'm probably biased, but I think he's just a lot better than most guys in that style. But these first couple pages are in this different kind of art style that's more dreamy, and just kind of has different coloring styles, a more painted look. And so, and then it switches to that style I was talking about, where it's more, the colors are much more traditional coloring and everything. So it starts off with Mark. The story arc is called Welcome to New Egypt, which when we get to the end of the issue, I'm so curious what's going to happen, because it was amazing. I've read this 3 times. That's how good it was. I rarely do that, like, consecutively. So it starts off with Mark in this dream. He's in Egypt. He's walking towards the Temple of Khonsu, and he's kind of talking to Khonsu. And then eventually he sees him, and the Khonsu that we see sitting is the one that was in the series before this that they introduced, that Warren Ellis introduced, which is like this man with this huge bird skull, which I love. It's just, to me, it's super iconic. Like, it's a really great addition to the Moon Knight mythos. You can see that. That guy. And we get this huge page that kind of captures a lot of his past. It has him as Jake Lockley, Steve Grant, Mr. Knight, who was introduced in the previous run, who it's basically Moon Knight, except he's just wearing an all-white tuxedo. Or not a tuxedo, but just a suit. And then he wakes up, so he was dreaming, and it turns out he's in a mental institution. Two of the orderlies, or whatever you want to call them, come in and say, "What are you screaming about, Spectre? We're tired of, you know, hearing about your crap." And then they inject him. And then he wakes up, and they are giving him electroshock therapy. And then he passes out again, and then he wakes up, and he's in the main room of the psychiatric ward, and there's a bunch of people in there, and the first person you see talking starts saying something, and she's like, and then it sparks a memory in Mark, and it's actually her name's Gina, I think. She had this diner that he would always go to in the old series. And she's just sitting there saying stuff like she was in the diner saying it, but she's just sitting there saying it. So you're kind of like, you're starting to question everything Mark is questioning. Because right now he doesn't really remember anything either. But like, you as the reader, like, did any of that really happen? Or is he really insane? Because like, there's a lot of proof here that he wasn't. And then he looks at a TV, and there's a story with Moon Knight on it. Moon Knight fighting Stained Glass Scarlet, one of his more notable villains, and then a guy comes up, and this is another guy from that diet from Gina's diner. His name's Crawley. If you've read any of the old Moon Knight stuff, he's just part of the mythos. He's a homeless dude that's just really smart. But he never has any money. But he speaks like an English gentleman, and he starts to tell him, like, you know, this is all fake. This is all made up. Don't believe anything you see because this is just all made up. And Mark's kind of slowly, he remembers when he first died in front of the statue of Khonshu. And then those orderlies come back because, you know, they probably see that Crawley is sparking these memories. Mark passes a girl that looks just like his love interest, Marlene, and he has a memory of them being together. And then finally he goes to like the head psychiatrist to talk with her, and it actually looks like Scarlet, but just in a business suit. And she's like, you know, I'm kind of disappointed that you're regressing. You know, this is all fake. It's all stuff that you made up. She shows him a journal that he wrote, that, and it has like old Moon Knight drawings and Moon Knight lines and stuff in it, written in it. And then she's like, you have, and this is what was introduced in the last series, was dissociative identity disorder, which him having multiple personalities isn't new, but them labeling it like that was new in the last series. Yeah. And then Mark steals a pin, and he's in his room that night, and he hears Khonshu talking to him, and then he escapes, and he makes a makeshift Moon Knight suit, which is pretty great.
Okay.
Yeah. And once he puts the mask on, he starts seeing everything differently.
Yeah.
All the people have dog heads, like Anubis. And then he beats all of them up. And then he escapes to the roof, and he looks out, and instead of like New York, he sees New York mixed in with the tower or the pyramids of Giza and everything, and there's like flying Anubis guys and everything. So kind of getting back to the Egyptian roots of Moon Knight in a big bad way. So he's standing looking at that, and then but one of, I'm not sure if I just assume this is a Greg Smallwood signature thing that he does, but he does this panel split up like this where he just puts, let's see, 1, 2. There's 15 panels on this page. That's quite a bit. But he does that a lot, and it's a really artful way to help the storytelling. He's still talking to Khonshu. He sees the moon and everything, and then some more orderlies come out, and they take him down, and they take the mask off, and as soon as they take the mask off, everything looks normal again. The city looks, he's in New York, and it looks normal. The orderlies look normal. And then Mark is like, okay, for a second I thought that this was all a conspiracy, but now I'm not so sure. And that's where it ends. And it was amazing. I really hope you pick it up and read it, because
what was the name of the arc again?
Greg Smallwood.
No, it was like, you said some ancient Egyptian or something like that. Like the name of the book, you know, it's like they're starting their arc and all that.
Oh,
sorry.
Welcome to New Egypt.
Welcome to New Egypt, because that's what you were saying, like it's going back to the roots of Mark Spector being Egyptian and all that. So it's like, oh yeah, that's cool how they named it that too as well.
Yeah, I haven't read all of Moon Knight because there's some stuff I haven't picked up yet, but I haven't seen Egyptian stuff since the Fist of Khonshu series, which was only like 6 issues. Before that, it was just the whole Egyptian thing was always kind of pushed to the background, so it was nice to see it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alright. So, Star Wars, Obi-Wan, and Anakin. Can we just start and say how good this series is?
It's amazing.
Like, if this...
It's amazing.
...was any of the prequels, I would have been like, Whoa. George Lucas, you genius. Probably wouldn't have been him writing it, though. Alright, so where they're at in the story, I guess, is they're stuck on a planet that is in a civil war conflict.
Yeah.
And
the opens and the closed.
Opens and the closed are fighting each other, essentially, just for resources. And
bigotry.
And bigotry, yeah. So, it was a really cool setup and all that stuff. So, from where it was last point in the last issue, was it the clothes that kidnapped Anakin?
I don't remember. One of them.
I know it's yeah. There's hard to distinguish, I guess. But one of them kidnaps Anakin because they realize he is good with technology and he's able to make things work again. And that's in this context of the story, in this planet that they're on, the technology doesn't work. So they're trying to pretty much fight to survive without a lot of stuff. So they're flying away from their air blimps. Let's say, you know, holding on, and well, I think it's the closed. I really think it's the closed.
I think it's really interesting that Charles Soule touched on, because I don't think we've ever really experienced anything in the Star Wars universe when they weren't able to use any technology. It's always been there. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. So they jump. So I think it's the closed. They blow up the air balloon that they're in, and they have to escape Anakin in the open. And they go down to the surface where all of these monsters are, which are from the air, I believe they said. It's destroying their minds and all that. We go, where did the Mother Pran and Kola to take the kid and all that stuff? Where did they take Anakin? They have some more conversation going on, saying that this is the way to go. I was hoping he would say the clothes, but he doesn't say it here. But the air is poisoned during the war. No good for thinking people down here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the... You just look at the art's really good, too.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
You see the dystopian world that they're in, essentially.
Yeah.
Just all of this, just stuff coming in that's in the air, it looks like. It is the open. Fortress home of the open. Yep, so the open did steal Anakin to work on technology.
Because they were like, hey, you're really good at fixing things. Guess what? Yeah. We have a lot of stuff to get fixed.
Okay, yeah. So who's the prisoner? Chief Mother Pran, the leader, we can assume, of the Open. She gets back to the Open's home world, or home base. So is he Open or closed? Neither. He's Sky Gift. That was pretty cool how they did that. Skywalker, Sky Gift. Yeah. It shows them, she goes, yeah, he's a gift indeed, I'll show you why. And then she goes to this robot, looks like a Metal Gear. Sorry, you don't know if you play Metal Gear. It no. Definitely looks like a Metal Gear Solid thing.
Okay, Shaylin.
He is very good with machines. The droid, he fixed it. So they're saying, oh, you know, we can actually win this war right now. He says, Anakin saved us all. And this part for me was why it truly works, this whole arc, the Anakin and Palpatine dynamic Charles Soule has made. Because one, in the movies at least, here's the thing as well that's going to go on. Anakin doesn't, in the last issue, they had established that Anakin wanted to lead the Jedi Order. That wasn't established in the movies, and I don't recall the stuff I read personally of the Dark Horse comics and all that stuff. They didn't really go into that kind of stuff with Anakin and that turmoil that he had, I guess. Because then they also are seeing the bureaucratic aspect of this whole council and how the system is flawed. And he sees that, and he doesn't like that. So he's like, well, if the Jedi can't do anything, what can we do? You know?
Yeah.
I loved this dynamic because you never saw that in the movies. Because in the movies, you just saw a blindly following the whole, you know, the whole thing, Anakin, and but when he sees something, my whole vision skewered by just going, hey, I'm in love with this woman, you know, and she's carrying my child, but this guy over here says, oh, they're bad now. So he's talking to Chancellor Palpatine, in the previous issue, they found a corrupt bureaucrat, and they're like, yeah, we can't really do anything about him, though, because this is not how the system works. But you have the Jedi. You can order them to do it for you. Anakin, the Jedi aren't mine. They are under senatorial authority. Asking them to arrest a senator, it would be a serious matter. If they were required to obey my commands in such a way, it would make me more of a dictator, and that is not my wish. So it's just a really cool dynamic that they have together. Something that you really didn't see in the movies, and just why it worked so well in this series.
Yeah. We got a few scenes in episode 3, we needed those in episode 2.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is kind of filling that gap.
So then we see later, Anakin goes to talk to Obi-Wan, and why did it? He basically says, you know, I don't want to be in the Jedi Order anymore, and he gives him his lightsaber. He says, you know, I know my training isn't complete. I have more to learn. I know I could learn so much of it more from the other Jedi, but not all of it. So he's just saying he wants to go see the galaxy, which is, you know, that's what he wanted to do all along. You know?
Yeah.
But how he put it as well was really cool.
He was like,
you know how I joined the Jedi Order? I've never forgotten. My mother asked Qui-Gon if he could take me away, if I could become a Jedi. He said yes. And that was all. My entire life decided right then. I was 9 years old. You know, I saw a magical man with a sword made out of light and a starship. I was a slave on a world made of dust. What was I going to say? No. It's like, yeah, it's just like that aspect of it. It's just like, yeah, of course Anakin was going to say, yes, take me away from slavery. So yeah, so more stuff goes down on the planet. They go back to a flashback, and you see Obi-Wan still trying to find out where Anakin's at, and then another character comes into it saying, you know, I have all of this stockhold of technology here that cannot be used, because I don't want to see the open and close use it, because they're not the right people to use it, and stuff like that. And then, later on, you see that Open are going to war with mecha robots. So pretty cool. Do you know how many issues it's going to be? Is it 5 or 6?
It's supposed to be 5, but I really hope it's ongoing.
Yeah, it is really good. I just love this.
Yeah.
Charles Soule is definitely one of the best writers around right now.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to spend too much time on Darth Vader number 19, mostly because I have no idea what's going on in the story arc, and I have to go reread everything.
No.
But it's the Shu Torin War, Part 4. There's a cool opening. Triple Zero, the black C-3PO, the black protocol droid. He has a speech in the beginning in front of an army of robots. I will point out there's this amazing moment where you see these two guys on the cover besides Darth Vader. They're like, we both can't defeat him, and then the guy turns to the girl and says, you're right, we can't, but I will, and he shoves her into a pit of lava. And so she's in this pit of lava, and then Darth Vader uses the Force to pull her out of it, and you get this, right, Darth Vader? Okay.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I just don't have it right next to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you read it this week?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. This moment was just insanely amazing to me. Just because of how it parallels Darth Vader being burnt by lava and everything, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just love seeing the Force used in ways where it's like... You know, if anything ever happened in the movies, you're like, well, why didn't he just use the Force to do blank?
Yeah.
This is one of those things where it's like, well, he used the Force to pull her out of the lava, and she's so crispy. They don't really show anything, but she's like see smoke coming off of her.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that Vader just needs like the little data disks, and then you don't see what happens to her. I'm going to assume that he kept her and is going to do something with her later. I think just like have a pseudo apprentice or something like that. Yeah, so there's parliamentary stuff going on with the factions in this war and the kings and stuff that I don't understand. I need to reread it. I just the spacing or whatever, I just got lost. So I need to really reread this. But it's been different. It's been cool to see Darth Vader as you mixed up with these powerful people, but he's above them. But it's just still cool. He's kind of like advising them in a way. And then yada yada yada, talking to 000, and then that inspector.
I remember something that 000 did say in that series. I don't remember where it's, or that issue. I don't remember where it's at, but he was trying to make the robots like sentient, I believe. Do you remember that part?
He was trying to take their blood. He was trying to human blood, people's blood, and
to put into those droids.
Yeah, or something.
Something you've never seen in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Make them like the cross between, which is like Darth Vader turned it down in an instant because it's like, oh no, because you know, as broken as Darth Vader is, he's still the the force wielders, the Jedi. They're like they're very higher up in the chain of like the society and all that. They just believe the force is pure and nothing can be mixed in between that. That's why he like shot it down completely. It's like, no, there wouldn't be true force wielders or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember that and I loved that. Oh, man.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing, how in the main Star Wars series, between every arc, Jason Aaron writes from the journal of Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Yeah.
I think between the arcs of Darth Vader, they should do like an origin for 000, and not really have it be about him, because I feel like we get enough of him in the series already, but have it be about his creator and just why he is the way he is. Because the only like homicidal droid I know of is IG-88 or any assassin droid, but that's very basic programming. That's like, kill because I was programmed to kill. 000 has a personality about killing, and it'd be interesting to see why that is. And so the last page, Inspector Thanoff is back. I thought he was pretty cool when they first got introduced. But yeah, like I said, I need to reread this arc because I'm lost.
Yeah.
Well,
it's also going on in Star Wars too, because like his bounty hunter, I don't remember her name, but she's like in the prison with Leia.
Aphra, Dr. Aphra.
Yeah, so that whole thing's going on too. They're all pretty much just tied together.
The rebel prison story arc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Star Wars Special C-3PO. You just kind of want to both talk about this.
Yeah, that's fine.
So this was supposed to come out in February, I think. I would like to read an entire novel on why it took so long, because the artwork is not something that seems like it would have taken that long.
yeah, it's fine.
It's not bad for what it is, but like it's just it's not great. It was a good story. It was.
Yeah, since we're talking about the droids and all that, because I really liked the. We're talking about 333's personality and all that, and then that droid talks about it in the whole that's what this whole one shot is.
Yeah,
what really defines being a droid, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what really sold me on the book. It's
just something you don't really see in Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
C-3PO, you just accept him. He's a droid. You know, yeah. He's the comic relief of the original trilogy.
Yeah.
You don't really go, okay, who's his maker? Or, you know, it's just, you just accept him for what it is.
Yeah.
But this really delves deep into what really droids are in this universe.
Yeah, and we've never really seen, like, at least we haven't seen protocol droids interact with each other without humans around. So that this was really cool, because they are going to talk about stuff like this, and they're going to be philosophical. So, yeah, and then it was just like, I think it was a good origin for the Red Arm.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't what I was expecting, but at the same time, it was a good origin. It was sad, because, you know, this droid dies, but like in any time, you know, a good writer can make you sad for feeling a droid's death. But I thought it was a great origin for the Red Arm.
Oh yeah, it definitely was.
Do you think they're ever going to talk about it in the movies?
I wouldn't think so. Well, he's already got his arm back.
The
final shots of the movie, it's just, oh, he has a gold arm again. So, yeah. I mean, I don't care enough to, now that I have read it and gone, okay, that's why he has the red arm in the movie, it's fine. But, like, for it to have been a thing in the movie, it was just, and for it to just be fixed at the end of the movie, it just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be, like, J.J. Abrams said it was supposed to be more for, like, you know, how from his movie standpoint, doing it to where you're seeing the time has passed, you know, history has gone on with C-3PO and R2-D2. So from that standpoint, yes, it makes sense. But for when you're just going, well, it's just a red arm, okay? and then it's fixed.
Yeah.
So like how in the original movie, C-3PO had a silver leg. And then just at the end of the movie, it's just fixed.
So one other thing I wanted to mention, I'm now on Essential Punisher Volume 4. I'm well over halfway done. I plan on finishing it tonight. And we're like at the very beginning of the 90s. Story... No, I'm not going to generalize the 90s like that. Never mind. It's good, but it's different than like the earlier Punisher stuff. What a lot of the issues have been are, here's a situation, and also the Punisher is here. Instead of like the Punisher leading the situation. But I think the reason why that is because at this point there's like, either one or I know there's one, but there's either one or two other Punisher series going on. There's War Journal and War Zone, so I think that's why like the main title kind of it's expecting you to be reading those other two. You're not missing anything, but at the same time, it's like you're missing stuff like the him being the actual main focus of it and then stuff like that. So yeah, that's what I'm reading. Anything else?
I'm not currently reading anything right now, so other than the new stuff.
Okay. Well,
Carrie still hadn't gotten Wonder Woman Earth 1. She said she just didn't get any, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Oh, I can't read that yet. I want to. But
yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Well, that'll do it for this week. We should mention that was 2 weeks combined together. We didn't get a chance to record last week, but I only had one other book this week, so it kind of worked out because we had two small weeks combined into one. So that was good.
I had a,
Yeah, I had a bunch of other books, but none that I've caught up on. So, yeah. Like Batman and Robin Eternal, that's done.
Oh, it is?
It's final. Its final issue came out this week, but I have not. I'm on, like, issue 9 of 26.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I'm far behind.
Okay. Well,
see. Don't forget the disclaimer.
Oh, yeah. I need to say that at the beginning.
I know. We keep forgetting to do that.
It was kind of a rocky start. I was super tired. I'm super tired just because I've been in bed all day. But disclaimer. What was it? We promise. We can't promise that this podcast will be funny or entertaining.
Yeah.
And I think today's episode was proof of that.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's more for you and me than anything, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, people are listening, are they?
I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully, maybe.
We'll see. I barely upload an episode, and then after that, I don't do anything after that. I just, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't even looked gone to the site. So. I need to today. So.
Well, maybe after. Maybe after episode 1,000, when we're 200 years old, we'll have one listener.
Yay!
Yeah.
All right. I'm Zach.
I'm Ambrose.
And we promise we'll do better next time.
Yes. Very good.